Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us here in the second hour. We are speaking with Mark Passio from whatonearthishappening.com. We're talking about the new age, the travesty, of course, of the eradication of self-preservation and all the other horrible components of our modern world, basically, and how these are now converging between the new age and between our so-called democratic values and everything else. And before we dive into some of the streetwise spirituality we talked about earlier, Mark, I just want to mention as well that we had, I think it was last week or actually a couple of weeks ago in Sweden, speaking about, being in a situation where you can, where you basically are funding the tyranny and the violent system, the violent by proxy around you. Right. It was actually on July 24th, it was the first day of the year when you start working the next following day. That time you actually start working for yourself. The rest of the year, that money will actually go into your own pocket as opposed to the state.
Unbelievable.
I think you guys in America have it sometimes in early April, so you do have it a little bit better, but nonetheless.
Mid-April.
It's still pretty bad. I mean, I wouldn't say we're not wage slaves because, for your services, you get, wage in return, which is good, which you can do things where, but we are tax slaves. And the question is, of course, is how is this money being spent? How is it done above your head? Where is this going? I mean, if it was a situation where the state indeed had good rulers and our best interests at heart, it would, of course, be a different scenario. I'd still have some complaints, of course. But when the situation is what it is right now, and the fact that we basically have a building of a prison system around us, to just have that realization that more than half of the year in Sweden, you work for the state and not for yourself. I mean, I'm amazed at the people.
To contribute toward your own enslavement.
Yes, exactly. It's amazing.
Part of the reason that, I will not work for anyone who engages in tax withholding. And that makes it very difficult because you have to basically find work that people are willing to pay you cash to do.
Yeah.
And it's quite difficult at many times. But, I think the answer is simply not to give them that, but it's very difficult for a lot of people to make a living when it comes to, working off the books. And many people cannot do it. Many people will not hire people in that way, because they're themselves threatened with violence if they do. And, this is part of really what people have to make a decision to engage their willpower to stop doing. It's not an easy choice. Saying no is simple but not easy. It's a real simple thing to do. You have a choice to either comply or not comply. And but the problem is people look at it, what's easier for me in the short term? They're not looking at it from the long-term perspective of, I continue to do this and doing so gives more resources to the state, and they're using it to turn the apparatus of the state against my rights and freedoms. In the long term, of course, the wrong answer is to continue to pay taxes. In the short term, people look at it like that prevents violence from being done against me and me from being thrown in a cage right now. So unfortunately, this is the negative aspect of the survival mechanism of the being, is it always thinks about its short-term survival. Yeah. As opposed to its long-term.
That's right.
Good. So that's where the mind really has to exercise discernment and judgment, which is one of the big factors of true awakening, in my opinion.
Well, exactly. And it's just incredible. I mean, I think when are we going to realize that the work we put in is not done for ourselves? I mean, I think as an American, I would possibly, I mean, we have a lot of stupid programs in Sweden too, for sure. And there's going to a lot of things, which is to the detriment of the people. The majority population is not even actually protected under the same rules and laws that minorities are, for example. But I mean, you guys generate so much money in America, but it's all going to these defense, budgets from Israel, right, to Egypt, and look at how your foreign policy is run and the military and everything else. Right. And I mean, that in itself is a huge problem. It's a huge problem in this equation of the voluntary aspects.
That's right.
People are, there is a choice that they could make here. But as you said, for the threat of the potentiality of that short-term danger that could be posed to them, they choose not to do it. But what kind of world is that creating in the long term? And what, I mean, even security-wise for America, right? I mean, if there wasn't a thing such as genuine terrorism, if we consider all the false flags, I think today there certainly is, considering the behavior of how AIPAC has been, you know, running your country and everything else. Sure. It's horrible, you know?
I mean, you need to look no further than the example of medicine to see, oh, people think that all this money should be put into the medical industry and it shouldn't be private. And you look at how now the government has completely taken over the healthcare system of the United States, and the people think it's going to cost less, but really costs are going to be driven through the roof, and
of course,
the
yeah.
quality of the care is going to go down as well. But another thing that immediately illustrates how people will put resources into their own enslavement, I think there's no better example of than the so-called educational system.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Because you're paying the state to indoctrinate your children through your taxes. You're putting money into the so-called educational system, and the state is actually indoctrinating the children, not really educating them, but indoctrinating them into being compliant slaves. That's what the whole public education system is all about. And people vote for it and love it and think it should be done and say, oh, property taxes are legitimate because it goes toward local education. And all they're doing is they're cranking out people that are incapable of critical thought as a result of the education system. And the people who take a strong stance against that position that I laid out there are the teachers, because they think that, oh, because we're involved in it, we can't be doing something that's bad. You know, we're really trying to help the children, but they don't understand. They can't help the children from inside a system like this. If you're prevented from teaching them real knowledge, okay, and you have to withhold certain things that you would rather be telling to them, that's not education. That's called you're setting a narrowly defined curriculum to output a product. The child is the product, and you want them coming out the other side of the assembly line in a certain way. That's what outcome-based education is all about. And real education is not that. That's an indoctrination technique, what outcome-based so-called education is. And the people who are involved in that are all people who consider themselves, oh, well, I'm one of the good guys. I'm trying to educate children. But they don't understand that they're really being prevented from doing that by the very system that they work in. It all, Henrik, really comes down to one dynamic. An immoral system cannot be changed from inside an immoral system, period.
Mm-hmm.
Just that is a 100% true blanket statement axiom that can never be changed or altered. The truth of that is eternal. An immoral system can never be changed from within that immoral system. The immoral system fuels and perpetuates itself, and if you are working within it in any way, you are fueling and perpetuating that system and making it grow bigger by giving your energy to it. An immoral system is only ever broken down from outside of that immoral system. An immoral system is only ever broken down by the lost word, which is no, by saying no to it and refusing to comply with its demands, by refusing to comply with what it wants to make society into, by what it wants to output, by how it wants to indoctrinate our children and steal our resources, etc. You have to say no to that and step outside of it. Working within it is never going to essentially change it. This is a pipe dream, and it's one of the pipe dreams that is perpetuated within the New Age and these politically correct circles that you're speaking about. People think, I'm going to go into the system and change it. I'm going to become a lawyer. I'm going to become a judge. I'm going to become a military leader or commander. I'm going to become a politician. And all that happens whenever they get involved is they get sucked into the vacuum. They get sucked into the blackness, because the system itself is the problem. The system is based in inherent violence. The system is based in the lack of knowledge. The system is based in propaganda. The system is based in indoctrination. The system is based in mind control. The only way out of that is by not complying with that system, by not cooperating with that system, by saying no to it 100% and ultimately destroying it by doing so, because we're the energy that holds this system, this immoral system, up. When we stop giving our energy to it, it will collapse of its own weight. But unfortunately, too many people still comply and go along to get along and give their energy over to this immoral system.
Yeah. I mean, this is something that all these appeals, it might sound good to some people who basically can't think, who can't think long term and see the end result, but it is ultimately an appeal to their emotions. They're controlled by these sound bites. They hear it on the media. They see it somewhere. They realize, oh, it's for the children, for the betterment of society. But obviously, as we know, they're not using their rationality or their logic. They're completely controlled by their emotions. And so consequently, yep. This is something that is to the detriment. So what happens, of course, is that people that are, I believe, can see the long-term effects of this. Everyone actually has the same not everybody, but a lot of people have the same outcome. They share that in common. They want to see a betterment of everything. It just is such a fundamental difference in what the application should be to get to those goals, you know? And go ahead.
And you made a brilliant point because it ties back into the New Age religion controlled by their emotions. You know, you can't think logically with your emotions. Your emotions are there to set a moral compass for your actions in life, the direction that your actions are going to take you in life. That's the purpose of the emotional makeup of the being. It isn't to discern truth with the emotions, okay? You discern truth with the mind. That's what the whole mind part of mind, body, spirit. The emotions are the spiritual aspects of the being. They're going to guide your moral compass, but they're not going to determine truth for you. That's going to be done with the mind, with filtration processes, with discernment, with judgment. These are not negative things, discernment and judgment. And this is what the New Age insists that they are. Don't judge, never judge. That's what it always tells you. And when you don't judge, you're basically not differentiating between things, and you're just allowing everything. Another big New Age deception.
Yeah.
Everything should be allowed.
Say yes to everybody. You know, exactly. There will never clash in any way, right?
There it is. Get rid of the lost word. Get rid of the word no. Again, that's why they call it lost. The word no is lost. Hence, that's why in esoteric Freemasonry, it is known as the lost word. People aren't saying no to evil. They're not saying no to immorality, you know? So the word no is considered lost. Until you say no and stand within right, that dynamic is going to continue. The evil that you're experiencing is going to continue. So the main thing that you said is, they're trying to think with their emotions, and so many people are engaged in this. I'll give you another little anecdotal example, and this ended kind of on a positive note, actually, with some good change coming about that I was very impressed with. I won't mention the person's name. I don't know if they want to have their name mentioned on the air, but a friend of mine who was an Obama supporter, voted for him twice, just thought about these campaign promises that he made from an emotional perspective. Oh, isn't it wonderful? He's going to do this. He's going to do that. He's promising this. He's promising that. That makes me feel so good. I feel like there's someone who's going to be in charge who cares about things, who cares about me, who cares about the people, who wants to shut down Guantanamo Bay, who wants to, you know, bring transparency in government, all these things that were promised. Of course, none of them were done, but the person had this faith and this good feeling, this feel-good emotional quality that he was very good at inspiring in people and fostering in people falsely. And this person had fallen for it and voted for him twice and, you know, got wrapped up in the whole thing. And now finally, after, you know, almost 6 years, I guess, came forward and came back to me when I was trying to explain to him, now he's just part of the control system. It's all the same party. He just is putting on a good dog and pony show, trying to, you know, play controlled opposition and make you think he's the good guy and he's going to continue with all these agendas, which is exactly what he did. But this person didn't want to accept that at the time. Now this person came back and essentially said to me, I was wrong. Everything that you were trying to tell me was correct. I see it now. I see that they're all the same. What can we do? But it, you know, while this person was kind of feeling hopeless that there was nothing that could be done to change it, that's where the person is at, perhaps at this point. I don't know if they're past that now.
Right.
I certainly think something could be done to change it. Otherwise, I wouldn't be saying a word. But it was tremendously encouraging because at least that person had the courage to come forward and say, hey, I was wrong. I admit it. I'm not too ashamed to admit that I was wrong and that you were correct and you tried to tell me and I didn't want to listen. I have tremendous respect for that person for saying something like that.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, was basically still so concerned, like, well, what have we allowed this country to become? There's no one we could turn to within the system. I said, yes, that's right, because the problem is the system itself. And maybe this person is coming around to starting to understand that now. But you can see how long it takes and how many negative things have to happen, unfortunately, for most people to admit that they were wrong about the control system. That's why we have to continue to put these seeds out there, because perhaps without somebody constantly telling her, hey, this is the same old, it's same new boss, same as the old boss scenario, maybe that person wouldn't have come around to their current level of understanding. That's why speaking to people is so critically important, and getting them to understand how this system is immoral, and getting them or encouraging them to use their own discernment and judgment to come up with the truth about what's really going on. That's so important. That's really what the whole great work is all about, is influencing people in that respect.
Yeah, definitely. Speaking about politics, and I mean, fundamentally what you said there previously, Mark, is something that I agree with you fundamentally about your point. I know that the results, you know, at least I'd like to see ultimately something that will not come through any capacity of the existing system that is in place. But if there could be a small, however minute really, a small effect that would occur because of the influence that might come within the system to change the direction of where we're heading. I mean, what I'm saying is I basically come to realize that we need to fight a multiple front war. That's basically. Right. I've come to the conclusion that we need to have good people of all kinds, basically in all walks of life, in every field imaginable, industry, finance, education, and yes, even in politics, in departments of government, to start influencing in any capacity that they can to take things in a different directions. Because I mean, previously I've been very reluctant to, you know, to talk about that or kind of engagement in the system, I guess. I mean, I've been even more reluctant to use the word self-sacrifice, but in reality, having people that have a determination that they know that however small changes they can impose upon, you know, the system or turn it in a good directions. At this stage, I'm like, why not? The ultimate perfect system might not come and evolve out of that. But nonetheless, unfortunately, the predicament again that we are in is that people are inherently passive. They do sit around and they wait for the right person to come along to sway them or to convince them to go into this territory. I mean, let's face it, politics as it exists today, no matter how much we don't give a shit about it, is still fundamentally is influencing every day of our lives. Sure. And how our money is being spent and everything. So my point now is like, we need to get in and infiltrate everything imaginable. And people have to, in that regard, you know, sacrifice some bits of themselves in order to try to turn this around if they are truly dedicated and honest about trying to change the direction of the course we're at.
And I think one of the best ways that that could be done is family members. We could awaken certain people who are connected to these people, okay? It doesn't necessarily mean that we have to immediately reach that person or even go into that institution and affect it. I'm not saying that can't – we can't create some kind of an effect by working, you know, in certain circles within certain institutions. But I think the kind of connections we need to forge to create change are, let's say – a daughter who has a father who is in the military, a career military man, you know, her constantly bending his ear, you know, a son who has a mother who may be a state representative, you know, who the son wakes up and talks to his mother constantly on a daily basis about these issues. You know, we need people around these people to get them to understand what they're really complying with and what they're really taking part in at the highest level, the agenda at the highest level.
Well, exactly. And see, this is ultimately, this is a cultural change. This is actually what the cultural Marxists did, right? They turned the culture from the inside, from having the ideology of the young children swayed in towards their political, persuasion, right, and whatnot. And again, that's the tools we have to use. I mean, they've been controlling the cultural narrative. And again, let's face it, politics is not what's controlling culture. It's the opposite way, but it's a reflection of the culture. And that's right. Why, the memes, the thinking, the mindset, the focus and attention of people, that's right. Where it's at. That's where the ultimate work
is. That's what the cultural Marxist led by Gramsci deeply understood.
Yeah.
That's what's going to influence all the policies of a particular society, the ways that they act and their level of morality and their level of, their political ideologies. So, I think the main thing to take away from this is a numbers game. More people have to be reached. People in the New Age movement insist, oh, it's not a numbers game. We could change the world with a tiny amount of people. We just have to influence the leadership or something like that. It is about the people who give ideological support to any particular system. The masses are always going to be the battery that runs the whole engine of the world,
So that's right.
We have to reach a tipping point. This is that's why it's called a quantum shift. It's called a quantum shift for a reason. A particular amount of people are required in order for that tipping point to be reached and a new paradigm to be widely accepted. So quantum in Latin means an amount of something, literally. And, you have this notion in the New Age movement, a tipping point can happen by just a tiny, tiny, tiny few amount of people. We need, I would estimate, a minimum of over half. And I would say, really, if we want to kick a spiritual awakening into high gear, I would say we need over 2/3 of the people to really get behind the truth and really deeply understand natural law. A minimum of 2 out of 3 is what it's going to take, as far as I'm concerned, to really tip it in a true positive direction. And then we will work on the other stragglers and the really deeply egoically attached once we have that kind of a number. But I don't think we're even near it. I think we're not even near 1 in 1,000 people don't even get any part of it. I think we're at a very paltry number right now. I'm not saying that to discourage people. I'm saying that to tell people, to try to explain to people what our true work is to do, how much more influence we need to propagate out into the world and take the message of truth and true enlightenment to the wider masses of people if this dynamic on the earth that we're experiencing is ever going to change.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, you're right there. It is about the masses. And then at the same time, interestingly, you do have the individuals that, of course, can be the creative spark that ultimately sways the masses towards the, interests of our people, basically. But I think appeal to truth is something that should be something that stands on its own. I know that people are escapists. I know that they want to, deny things. They want to stick their heads in the sand and everything as well. But to a certain degree, one thing that we do have to work in our favor is the worse it gets, the more people will seek this truth and an understanding of why things are the way they are.
Sure.
I'm not trying to hinge everything on a kind of a collapse ideology that we all should sit around and wait until things get so bad that, now we can do something about it. Again, it's about a multiple front warfare. You have to do it in every department, every imaginable field. And that way you have to nudge your way forward. It's hard work. Again, it's your willpower, your intention, you putting the spade into the ground and digging into the dirt. That's what it's about.
It's spiritual battle on multiple simultaneous fronts. That's exactly what it is. I think you've described it very well. And what that really takes is, once again, deep discernment to recognize a lot of the religious deceptions that we've been hit with as a psychological warfare tactic. But then perhaps to segue into what I call the factors of true awakening, we need to really understand what is real spirituality. What is the real spiritual message, the real spiritual goal? What does it mean to be awake? What does it mean to be aware and enlightened? We've gotten all kinds of conflicting things from different religions, particularly the New Age religion, about what is enlightenment, what is true spirituality. What does it mean to be an active, awake spiritual being? And I think that my work with Streetwise Spirituality, particularly that seminar, brought a lot of good information to bear on these points. And I just got some good news actually during our break that I let you know about, that the video has just been completed for this seminar, and I'll probably be posting it later in the week. Very synchronistic that that would happen actually right during that time period that we conducted this interview. So in that seminar, I put together this list of factors of what needs to be present for there to be true awakening, true spiritual understanding within the individual. And I won't go into them super in depth here because, of course, time doesn't allow in this particular interview. People can also check out the video at their convenience. But I'd just like to, you know, go through some of these points, just list them even, and just touch upon a few of them, because I think it lends a lot of clarity to what it's really going to take to make change happen. I think it lends a little bit of clarity of, you know, what is true spiritual understanding as opposed to what people think is spiritual understanding, which is infinitely easier and lets people infinitely off the hook for what they allow and what they participate in, you know, in religious movements and in New Age circles. This is a more, what I would consider, adult, mature, and tough love scenario, or tough love factors, you know, which is why I called it streetwise spirituality. It's, again, integrating that streetwise, logical, left brain aspect to what has traditionally been considered a, you know, seeing the world through rose-colored glasses, right brain, floating off in a hazy spiritual, you know, mindset mentality. You know, we're bringing balance to this, and it's taking what were traditional spiritual ideas, but moving them into the modern world, and basically bringing them into a much more balanced understanding. So the first factor of this is knowing about the occult and understanding what the occult is, and understanding that there is a difference between the positive usage of that knowledge and the negative usage of that knowledge, which I call the positive aspect light occultism and the negative usage dark occultism. It's knowing what the occult comprises, the knowledge that it contains, why it's been hidden, how it has been used, and how that knowledge is transformative for the positive if we know it and employ it for the in the right way for the right reasons. Again, this is all topics I'm going to talk about in the Demystifying the Occult seminar coming up in Connecticut on October 4th. So this is what I consider the very first aspect of true awakening, is knowing about the existence of occult knowledge, hidden knowledge that is being sequestered from the masses. The second factor was knowing that truth is singular, objective, and independent of human perception. This is essentially anti-solipsism. A person who's spiritually awake is absolutely anti-solipsistic. They're also anti-morally relativistic. They're not a moral relativist, which I'll get to in a little while, but it's basically knowing that truth is not dependent on perception, and it's objective. It's something that exists independently of our perceptions of it. And, it, you know, the truth doesn't waver or change. Only human perception wavers or changes. And what our goal needs to be is to bring our alignment, bring alignment between our perceptions and the actual reality that does in fact exist. And, you know, New Agers will insist that's not true, that, you know, our perception is creating the reality, and it's all just perception, and there is no objective truth. And this is what leads people into dangerous belief systems, because if there's no objective truth, that means, of course, there's no objective morality, and everything is permitted, you know, including all levels of evil that people won't ever stand up against. The third factor was knowing the true self. You know, I would say all spirituality comes down to three words: know the self. That's the highest dictum of true spirituality and enlightenment, as far as I'm concerned. And we have to understand our connection to the self's connection to the all, that we're not separate from anything, that these systems affect us, we affect these systems, and it's an informed feedback loop. You know, the left brain, the super left brain imbalance among us often don't get this one, you know, because they don't understand the deep spiritual aspects of our being and our interconnection to everything. The fourth factor was that neither the physical reality nor the spiritual reality, both of which exist, are more important than the other or should take precedence over the other. So you have your materialistic worldview that postulates the notion that matter is supreme. There is no spirit or it's unimportant. And the spiritualists often think that matter is evil or bad in some way or foul or, you know, flawed. And somehow we need to, you know, just float off in a spiritual daze and ignore what's taking place in the physical domain. Neither one of these is a balanced approach. The physical and spiritual worlds are actually really one and the same. They're not separate from each other. That's part of the that is, thinking that they are is dualistic consciousness, and thinking that one takes precedence over the other is what real dualism is about. Unity consciousness is about understanding that, hey, you're in the physical domain now and you're in the spiritual domain. The physical world is the spiritual world and vice versa, and what takes place here does matter. It's not insignificant what happens in the physical domain, as many religionists and New Agers would have us believe. The fifth point was that we need to get out of being awake means being out of ego identification. We don't identify with the so-called the roles that we play in life and think we are our job or we are our culture or we are our social status, etc. The sixth point is being truly awake means exercising discernment and judgment, something I've emphasized over and over in this presentation because they are our filtration mechanisms for truth, for discerning truth, for understanding truth. And if we don't exercise judgment, again, it's like everything is just permitted. There's nothing that should be disallowed, and nothing should be called bad or wrong or evil. And this is just, you know, the kind of nonsense thinking that the New Age controlled paradigm of the New Age wants people to accept, because the controllers want to do evil unchecked. So they mm-hmm. don't want people's yeah. filters up. They don't want their judgment mechanisms raised. The seventh point was being awake means being mentally free of all false religions. This includes the religion of authority, of course. Understanding that authority is an illusion, being out of cultural religions because you recognize that they're all limited control systems of belief, being out of the religion of scientism, accepting science as the only measure of truth. And I'm for real science, but I'm not for system-controlled, government grant money-funded so-called science, which constitutes a paradigm protection, you know, the protection of the false paradigms that are already in place. That's what we have now. That's not real science. That's scientism. So that's what I call another false religion. The New Age movement constitutes another one of these false religions. And the biggest and most entrenched false religion of the world is the belief in money. So once you get out of those five false religions, politics or authority in general, cultural religion, New Age religion, scientism, and the monetary system, the belief in money, I would say that constitutes being mentally free of all false religions. The eighth point is knowing that there is no such thing as knowledge, which is negative. You know, the New Agers want to always say that, you know, that's so negative. Why are you bringing that up? I don't need to know about that. I don't need to hear about that. That brings me down. Right. You know, that lowers my frequency. You know, oh, knowledge lowers your frequency, really. And again, this is part of this whole New Age de-emphasis on knowledge, because they don't want people to know the truth. Of course, if you de-emphasize knowledge, people won't go off and seek truth, you know, and they'll think, oh, well, if that's negative, it brings me down from the spiritual cloud that I'm floating on 24 hours a day in my meditative trance. You know, I want to feel good and just have these endorphins pumping in me all day long, these endogenous morphine chemicals, you know, that make me feel good all day and, you know, make me feel like I'm taking, happy pills. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, knowledge is de-emphasized. I don't need to know that. And then I even look badly upon knowledge, which is uncomfortable for me, even though it may be very necessary for me to understand it. I call that negative. And I say, that's negative. You're being negative. And you see this so much in the New Age movement. It's unbelievable. And it's pathetic that anybody could think knowing something and being becoming aware of its existence is negative. You know, there's no such thing as knowledge that is negative or bad for somebody. Now, I'm not saying stay totally drowning in negativity, you know, in just focusing on nothing but the bad. It's understanding what's going on that's wrong and bad, but then it's also coming up with solutions and, you know, basically looking at what needs to change. That this is part of making a diagnosis, looking at the negative. So you know this is the causal factor and this is what needs to change. And that brings me to point nine. Being truly spiritual in a streetwise sense means deeply understanding the causal factors that have led to the current condition that humanity is experiencing. And, you know, that means knowing natural law, knowing what natural law is, knowing that the reason that humanity is in the current condition is because it has become so immoral and so lacking of the deep definitive knowledge between right and wrong behavior that it has basically engaged in violence and in ideological support for violence for so long that we have enslaved ourselves and we have perpetuated that enslavement. Once we understand that's the causal factors that led to the condition, we become in an empowered condition to change that. Then that brings us to number 10. Being truly enlightened means understanding and living in harmony with natural law. So once you know that those causal factors are what led to the condition, you're going to align your behavior. You're going to understand, stand under those laws of nature, okay? And understand that you have to change your ways. And then you actually perform that behavior to change the behavior into alignment with natural law. And then you will see the external conditions in the real world also change as a result. Point 11, the 11th factor of being truly awake and in a streetwise sense is knowing and living both pillars of enlightenment, which was one of the main topics that we talked about in part one of this interview, that the sacred feminine principle of enlightenment is the non-aggression principle. Don't engage in violence against your fellow beings, period. Violence is always wrong. It is always based in coercion. It is always a theft of something that you do not own, whether it be someone's property, rights, or life. And you just shouldn't engage in that behavior. That's the non-aggression principle, the sacred feminine principle of enlightenment. But enlightenment also means knowing the second tenet or pillar of enlightenment, which is the self-defense principle, stating that if you are accosted with violence, you have the inherent right under natural law to defend yourself against that violent incursion. Point 12 is knowing that authority is inherently illegitimate and an illusion, and that all government is slavery. All government equates to slavery. And many people still don't understand that, particularly people in the New Age movement. Little anecdote to this point, I went to a New Age convention, I guess you could say, a big expo, in Philadelphia back in, I think it was 2012. And I just, you know, did a little off-the-cuff poll, a little social experiment of walking up and down the aisles and asking people, are you a Republican or a Democrat? Do you believe government is legitimate? Mm-hmm. You know, do you participate in the government or political process? You know, do you think it's something that needs to exist? And about 98% of people, first of all, over 90% said that they were Democrats, and I would say over 98% said that they think that government is legitimate and needs to exist.
Wow.
And, yeah. You know, so part of understanding, part of being a truly spiritually awake being is knowing that true anarchy, the absence of masters, of rulers over other people, is the natural state of not only humanity, but all sentient beings.
Well, and let me add that too. I don't know if you agree or not, but I believe within nature, there actually is a natural order and hierarchy. Actually, there is a natural propensity towards a group of any being, really, any species, to gravitate towards, in some cases, a leader. Some people have speculated and called it actually a natural aristocracy, if you will, but there if again, this is another inherent point that used to be part of, I believe, human culture, that if it was a rotten egg that got into that position, the rest of the good men took care of business and make sure that one of the persons that is in charge, the wise elder or whatever you have, someone who's had experience in the group or teaching the young you know, men in the society, if there were warriors or what have you, that, you know, they would take care of business and out that person if they were unfit, and they make sure that a rightful and honorable leader of the group was in place. So I believe in a way that there is a natural hierarchy and a natural order, which is not based on abusive principles, you know?
Well, I think the natural order is anarchy, is an egalitarian system, but that doesn't mean everybody is equal. It means everybody's equal in rights in the egalitarian sense, as the way I've used that word in that context. That doesn't mean that there has to be a hierarchy based in authority. I think authority isn't a natural thing. That's a culturally conditioned concept. So you look at these ancient cultures, they were already preconditioned with that concept and just followed it, because they didn't really enunciate or elucidate that the concept of authority of one person over another is inherently illegitimate. It doesn't mean certain people won't have skills that they're more naturally adapted to carry out, while other people will have inherent skills that have adapted them for different reasons and different purposes in society.
I mean, I guess what I'm getting at there is that if there were challenges in our past, which included, you know, let's say warfare with other tribes, right. I think it was a survival mechanism to have, let's say, not everybody running around as a leader, but there was an organic military organization. Exactly. Yes. And I think we see that within nature as well, you know?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. That is what I would consider an ordering principle within nature, that is a centropic force that's at work in nature. That kind of organic organization, I have no problem with. When you get to the point where you talk about hierarchical or authoritative structures, then I have a big problem with that. And I think that that is part not of nature, human nature, but of the human condition that we are currently trapped in, that needs to be changed and broken down mentally. The construct it only exists as an illusion in a psyche that has bought into this inherently illegitimate concept. So the point generally is that the concept of someone's authority over someone else inherently, meaning I am somehow better than you, I have the right to command you, to give you commands, and you have the moral obligation to follow those commands, is of course inherently illegitimate. And that's what all government boils down to. Government is coercion. Government is saying we are the ruling class that gets to make up what the laws are, and you have a moral obligation to obey those laws regardless of what they are, because we have put them forward as the law, whether they're in harmony with natural law or not. That's called slavery, regardless of what anybody else wants to call it. If you don't have a choice and you're coerced into compliance, you're being made into someone else's slave. And again, most people in the New Age community, or who consider themselves quote unquote spiritual, will not see it that way. Incorrectly, they will not see it that way. And they believe that somehow authority and government is legitimate. Even, you know, you see so-called spiritual people like Buddhists, even them saying that governmental structures are legitimate. And again, it all comes from a right brain perspective. If you're super right brain imbalanced, you're going to bow down to some form of authority, because you're not going to want to physically ever challenge that person's authority over you by saying no. It's a compliance mind state. It's a standing down type of mind state. The 13th factor of the streetwise spirituality concept of real awakening was recognizing the critical importance of free will and personal responsibility. Again, many religionists in general, particularly New Agers, are dismissive of the idea of free will entirely and think, oh no, since there's an inherent intelligence in nature and the universe, that's guiding everything. And we can only, basically be influenced by that force, and we don't really have free will at the highest level. And this is a big trap and an illusion in all religion, the idea that there's no such thing as free will. Mm-hmm. Even science is coming around to this right brain position through its unimaginably left brain chronic imbalanced position of the supremacy of all matter, and that matter is ultimately deterministic, determining the actual result, that there's, since there's no, in their worldview, there is no consciousness. Somebody like Stephen Hawking is a perfect example of this sickness. He is a sick, sick, sick individual that is so left brain imbalanced that his mind is just completely destroyed. And people actually like worship this guy as a bastion of intelligence when he has not one drop of intelligence. He only has a completely out of control intellect. His intellect is very sharp. Absolutely. He could run circles around you with math equations. But when it comes to real wisdom, there's not one subatomic particle. Okay. You know, so in one of his new books, he wrote that philosophy is dead and there is no such thing as free will. You know, there's right. no point in people debating right and wrong. Everything is determined. It's all determined by matter, by the interaction of subatomic particles. And we're just basically flesh robots.
Right.
I mean, yep. If that's not a sick worldview, then I don't know what is. And, you know, and therefore you go into that worldview of everything is permitted then, because, hey, if it's all determined, we're not really responsible for our behavior. So why look at anything as bad? Why look at anything as unpreferable? It's just all being determined by chemical interactions and by subatomic interactions in matter. So, you know, anything is permissible because we're not in control of any of it. We're not directing any of it. There's no free will. There's no consciousness. It's an illness. This is a sickness.
This is the essence of relativism, right? If it's yes. moral, if it's cultural relativism, if it's, you know, even gender relativism, this is what they're doing. This is an attack, an assault on everything that's natural and the basic right. human components of trying to break those components down and saying, we've figured everything out with science and, oh, yep. you know, bet what? We figured it out. And it turns out none of this actually really exists. It doesn't really matter. And yep. everything is possible, right? So.
Yep. And hey, everything is a construct at some level. It's the universe imagining itself and having an experience inside a physical construct. That doesn't mean the experience is not important. That doesn't mean the experience does not matter. Why would the universe have done any of this? Why would it have created any of this if it was purposelessness, if it was all purposeless, if it didn't want to actually learn something, if it didn't want to actually integrate knowledge and grow and learn about itself? And that matters. There's that's not insignificant. That's not, you know, trivial. That there is the physical world and what happens in it matters. And that's a big part of the New Age deception is trying to tell, and all religious deception, trying to tell people, no, none of it matters. It's all just, you know, it's all an illusion to begin with. It's all Maya, you know? Oh yeah. Hey, I get it. At the bottom level of the unified field of matter, it's all just energy. It's all energy in vibration, having an experience. Does that mean the experience doesn't matter? Of course that it doesn't mean the experience doesn't matter. What happens here is important because it says something about the character of the beings that comprise the universe. It says something about our free will decisions. Are we going to be free or are we going to be enslaved? Are we going to live according to the boundary conditions that the whole universe created to advance its betterment and its further evolution and consciousness, or are we going to stagnate and go into deeper levels of chaos and enslavement? That's not an insignificant choice when it comes to our free will decisions, and that matters. So, yeah, absolutely great point regarding that point about free will. And I'll just briefly go through the last few.
Sure.
The 14th point was knowing that the so-called negative, quote-unquote negative emotions serve an important purpose. You know, they want to say, oh, all negative emotions like anger, you know, should be thrown out. We should never experience them. Well, anger could be a very good motivational factor toward creating positive change if it's employed for the right reasons, if it's righteous anger and then it's channeled and then we use it to motivate real world change.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah. they would have us purge these so-called negative emotions, quote unquote.
Let me bring something else in there. I don't mean to detract too much here, but sure. I think that all of this too, Mark, is actually very connected to you know, the war on the men, war on masculinity, war on testosterone, if you want to call it that. Because in this case, we have not only a chemical alteration of mankind going on right now, which is completely upsetting this natural balance that we talked about, but it's also this, it's a mental, I mean, there's numerous studies done on behavior, on for example, knowing that you win something or you lose something, or that you, you know, are on the supportive team, even the idea that you mentioned of let's say aggression in terms of you know, training or you know, sports or something that engages your body, your physiology, your biology,
right.
that this is actually changing all the levels of hormones in your body and stuff like
all
that.
All the biophysical chemistry. Exactly.
And this is again yet another factor in kind of breaking down the inherent and natural state of both men and women. But this ultimately is leading to this aspect that we have so few men that are actually willing and stand up and take this fight against the forces we're facing.
And those who do have that left are channeled into the control system through police and military institutions
as well. Yeah,
this is an absolute attack against the sacred masculine, which is why I originally called my original New Age BS presentation. The subtitle was the suppression of the sacred masculine. That's what all religion is ultimately about, because you need the feminine suppressed in the controllers, and you need the masculine suppressed in the slaves. That's how you get a world of masters and slaves. You know,
yeah,
that's right. That's the dynamic that they're. That's these synthesis dynamic that they're always trying to keep in place to play off against each other, which perpetuates this control system overall. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Point 15 was knowing that true enlightenment is not about pursuing your own individual bliss, especially in a world that's currently filled with suffering. You know, so many people in the New Age circles are about follow your bliss, you know, just meditate until you feel so great that you're like high all the time. That's not what enlightenment is about at all, you know, and more New Agers need to understand that this is not about trying to feel good and following your highest level of happiness at 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's about getting your hands dirty, getting in there in the real world and making change happen that is about basically preserving rights and increasing freedom and increasing consciousness and understanding of right, the difference between right and wrong.
Yeah, again, understanding the balance in nature and getting to a point of realization where you just basically say, everyone is not the same. They don't think like you do. Yes, there are bad people out there. There are people who have, you know, conquest and colonization and everything else in place. They don't have your best interests at heart. And it doesn't matter how much you wish that this wasn't the case. Again, this will be our downfall at the end if we don't realize and stop this process. Because, again, how is this going to affect our children if we don't stand up and say at this point? This is going to be complete, utter destruction and mayhem. And it's going to be due to our, that's why this is, people have to understand this, due to your stance on nonviolence, it is going to lead to even worse and more violent conditions. How about that? You know?
So. And I would say a stance on, again, just to disambiguate this, a stance on nonviolence is perfect. I have a total stance on nonviolence. Taking a stance against self-defense is very problematic, because now you're saying you need to cut the sacred masculine aspects of the being off, and therefore you're going to open that person and that society up to being ruled, to being enslaved by people who are completely psychopathic and do not have their better interests at heart in any way whatsoever. So, you know, nonviolence I can get behind, but not non-defensive force. You know, defensive force always has to be maintained as an inherent right when we are accosted with violence. Once you stand out against that and you think that should be monopolized and given to a microcosm of people, to a subculture of people, then I have a big problem, because you're essentially in doing that, you're creating a master race and a slave race. And nothing could be more naive to do something like that, or more foolish.
Yeah.
So, this idea that we're going to somehow pursue our own bliss, you know, is, again, it's a very naive approach when it comes to what these people think enlightenment really is about. It's about being so uncomfortable in how we have allowed the world to become that you get up off your ass and actually do something to change it. That's what real enlightenment is about.
Yeah.
So just a couple more here. Knowing what true forgiveness means is what being awake spiritually also comprises. People think forgiveness is about this turn the other cheek mentality. And it doesn't mean excusing wrongdoing infinitely. You know, this kind of like unconditional love they see is, no matter what you do, I still love you and, you know, accept you as you are and accept your behavior. This is totally lacking discernment and judgment. And I'm not saying go into vengeance. I'm not saying go into, you know, such loathing that you're obsessed with vengeance and revenge. What I'm saying is real forgiveness is a two-way street that involves someone actually being sorry for the actions that they have done and making a commitment not to continue to do those harmful actions. Otherwise, it's not real forgiveness. Yeah. You know, if a person is unrepentant regarding their past harmful actions and you just want to let it go, meaning I'm not going to hold on to the resentment and anger and, you know, negative mind state that your actions have caused, letting go, spiritually letting go of something is different than forgiving a person. Forgiving a person starts with that person making an apology for their behavior, and then you are accepting that apology without them actually proving anything right up front. You're saying, I'm willing to give you the chance to prove that you're not going to do this again, and therefore you have forgiven them something. Okay, you've given it before they've actually, you know, made that truly known and manifest in the real world by giving their word first. And, you know, if they don't continue to do it, that's fine. If they continue to do it, you would know that their apology was not sincere and that they're not sorry for what they have done. This is a high level of discernment when it comes to real forgiveness versus a fake form of forgiveness or a turning the other cheek form of forgiveness, which I certainly do not advocate.
Let me bring something else into the equation here momentarily here and just kind of, I mean, just to bring a different flavor into this idea of like, you know, the society that we have of laws and rules, and that you're basically tied, you're not allowed to do anything if we talk about vengeance, for example. I mean, just imagine a ferociously, and this have certainly occurred in many cases throughout our history, a violent rape and a consequent mutilation and murder of, let's say, your daughter or something like that. Right. And the inability by that father and let's say her brothers or something to be able to do something about the situation. I mean, that is a very, to put someone then behind in a cell, you know, with a PlayStation 3 after that, maybe if they even are charged at all. And, right. And this tremendous way that, I mean, I'm surprised, maybe we have, but I'm surprised to a certain degree, Mark, that we haven't seen more, let's say, fathers and brothers or other scenarios like this, of them actually taking what's called the law into their own hands.
Their own hands.
And
right.
Actually, and nulling out the situation and taking care of the problem that we all know would have to be faced.
This is man's law preventing the real cosmic justice inherent in nature from actually manifesting itself.
Yeah.
Let's just say before governments or the governments as we know them today, our ancestors would have acted quite differently in these situations.
Oh, yeah.
And,
oh, yeah.
You know, I definitely am all for that personally. And, you know, if people, again, see that as an extreme, go right ahead.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Probably people who see that as an extreme could never even imagine that happening to someone that they care about. Maybe if it did, they would think differently about their position.
Yeah, exactly.
So just a couple brief more. I'll make these quick. Knowing being truly awake spiritually means knowing the difference of between what cannot be changed and what should be changed. You know, and the whole idea of the whole New Age movement and religion in general is accept everything. Just accept this how it is. Don't try to actually change it. Well, we have to have the discernment to know what cannot be changed, meaning natural law, that it's in effect in the universe. You're not going to change that. So you could align your behavior to the actual moral laws that exist in nature. But certain conditions should be changed. They're here, they're active, they're present now, and they're wrong. And you shouldn't just accept that they're there and present just because they're there and present. If they're wrong, you should work to change them. So very important discernment to be able to make. 18 was caring enough to take real-world action to create real-world change. That comes through care. Your heart has to drive your behavior. Your emotions have to drive your actions ultimately. You know, you have to care enough. You have to feel enough of the inherent wrongness of the current human condition to say, I need to get up and actually perform real world actions to make this change, not just imagine it to change, not just think about it changing, to take action to make it change. 19, knowing that true enlightenment is not only about changing yourself, but also helping others to change. We talked about how important it is at the beginning of this segment to influence other people, to actually take the message of what real spirituality is about and what's really has gone wrong in our world and what the real human condition is, and speak that to other people at all times and places to help them to make that change in consciousness. And finally, I think this is one that a lot of religionists and New Agers get deceived of by the kind of archetypal figures that are put forward in front of them, like Jesus or Buddha, etc., as put forward in the religions. They think that true enlightenment equates to perfection, and it certainly does not. Being enlightened is not being perfect. If you're going to expect perfection in the physical domain, you're going to be sorely disappointed. Perfection only exists in the archetypal domain of pure thought, which doesn't really exist here. And if you're in the physical world and you know you're expecting perfection, you're going to be waiting a long, long, long time. Enlightenment is not about perfection. Enlightenment is about knowledge of truth and then acting in accordance with that truth. Being perfect is expecting to be perfect is setting up a role model to fail, setting up a person and having them look up to some sort of a role model that you could never actually achieve. It's a nice archetype to, you know, just look at and consider. But if you think that that's what enlightenment is about, you're probably going to give up before ever even really trying to reach true enlightenment, because you're going to say that's too impossible. And this is what dissuades a lot of people from looking into real spirituality, because these archetypal figures are put up on a pedestal and their example is so impossible to achieve that they look at it like, well, why even bother? So enlightenment does not equate to perfection. It's about doing the best that you can in the circumstances that you exist in.
Well, exactly. Very good, Mark. There's a lot of good points here, a lot of good things that we've gone through here today, a lot of things to think about, and in my opinion, so blatantly obvious. And I mean, it's like, it's unbelievable that we've gotten to this state. It just shows how domesticated and how controlled we've gotten as human beings, and as men as well, for that matter, in terms of what we've allowed so far. I hope that we see a change in mentality. I hope that we see something different coming into the human spirit, and are all, you know, manage to stand up against this and actually start, you know, putting this, you know, pacifism to the side and start taking action, doing something about this to change the situation we're in. It's very important, you know, incredibly important.
Won't it be nice, especially for people like us, to not have to constantly reiterate the blatantly obvious, or what should be the blatantly obvious, and then once the world is awoken to a certain extent, to be able to move on to even bigger and better and more imaginative things that we could set our sights onto at that point? It would be a beautiful thing if we could, but right now, this is our work.
Yeah, that's right.
And I want to thank you for doing it.
Thank you. Same to you, Mark. I appreciate your work. It's very, very valuable. It's very good, excellent perspective. And I hope that more people go over to your website, check it out, listen to your lectures, and follow along in all of your work, Mark. Please give us the details again before we wrap up here. Yeah.
My main website is whatonearthishappening.com. I always recommend people to go to the podcast section and go back to number one and start in order, especially if you're unfamiliar with my work, as it is a deep tapestry that requires prerequisite knowledge to be laid down as a foundation before you get to the later knowledge. So do follow through in a stepwise progression in order at your own pace. And I think a new worldview would open up for people if they followed that advice. Also, I have another website called freeyourmindconference.com. I've done two conferences here in the city of Philadelphia, one in 2011, one in 2013. You could check out both of those conferences in their entirety at freeyourmindconference.com, and check out my Demystifying the Occult seminar coming up in Manchester, Connecticut, October 4th, 2014, all-day event starting at 9 a.m. All the information for that seminar can be found at whatonearthishappening.com. Henrik, I want to thank you so much for inviting me to come onto the show again. It's always a pleasure to come on Red Ice Radio. I think you have one of the greatest sites on the entire internet, filled with invaluable information for people to enlighten themselves and acquire all the information that they need to really change this world for the better. So I commend you and thank you for the work that you do.
Well, thank you again, Mark. Really appreciate that. And we couldn't do it without people like yourself, of course. So please keep up the good work, and let's do it again soon.
Absolutely. Take good care.
And that concludes our program for this time. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. We'll be back with more soon. Radio 314 is next. Sinead and Megan will talk with Lana about the many issues that are facing European women. A very good discussion. Then we have Sen Gardner on Red Ice Radio on the path of the warrior, I guess. And also Dennis Weiss, Gordon Kennedy, Josh Reeves, and many more after this. We'll speak to you soon. Take care. Have a great rest of your day or evening. And stay strong or become strong.